Nizar Banat, I think, was the man who had the bravery and all the strength that many others lack. He used his voice to speak. He never held a gun to shoot at the security forces or any member of the Palestinian Authority. All he had his voice, his bravery, talking about what is wrong, the corruption, the security coordination with the Zionist enemy that Mahmoud Abbas is insisting on keeping. So I think other circumstances maybe has led to the assassination of Nizar, because after the battle of the Al-Quds sword, the Palestinian Authority sensed that the popularity, its popularity is going down. So
Mr. Ali, before I even contacted you to come and be our guest speaker, I spoke with four different Palestinian natives living in the West Bank who canceled right after actually saying, yes, we'd be happy to talk about Nizar, but they canceled because they were afraid that they would be incarcerated
exactly.
themselves. So it's a real police state there.
Exactly.
And as you said, Nizar didn't even have a weapon to defend himself, because weapons are also not allowed because of the coordination, the security coordination with Israel. But in early May, he had gunmen firing bullets, tear
exactly.
gas, grenades, stun grenades at his house while his wife and his children were inside the house. He blamed the attack on Mahmoud Abbas himself and the Fatah party. Now, is there something that could have been done to avert them attacking his house again, or is it just too complicated to talk about it as if it's something that should not happen? Because we don't really have a lot of information coming out of the West Bank.
Exactly. But we have to know something before to answer this, because if you take a look at the history of the relation between Nizar and the security apparatus of Abu Mazen, you'll find out that he was taken to as a detainee for like 10 times or 15 times before. He was beaten. He was at several times his bones were crushed, and still Nizar remained the same. In other ways, Nizar was sending a message that no matter how violent you were in dealing with me, in trying to oppress me, in trying to silence me, I will not be silent. I will remain speaking. He went to run for elections, the elections that Mahmoud Abbas canceled during the last month.
In May, yeah.
Yes. So all the voices that declared that they are against the way that Mahmoud Abbas is ruling regarding the elections and regarding the corruption with the coronavirus vaccines, also with all the security coordination with the Zionist entity.
The goal of the coordination with the Israeli entity, is it he learned from them how to suppress his own people?
Actually, he is getting paid to prevent resistance. This is the main role of the Palestinian Authority. The Oslo Accords made it clear that any authority that the Palestinian Authority to rule in the West Bank, it has to do this to prevent any act of resistance. Now I believe Mahmoud Abbas moved into another step by silencing all the voices. We are not talking about taking guns or putting resistance activists inside jail. We are talking about oppression that is not serving. It's serving the goal of a dictatorship. We are talking about a dictator now. Mahmoud Abbas has turned himself into a dictator. He is no different than other dictators.
What are the options left for the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank to try and at least fix the situation? We don't want Palestinians fighting one another, but what options do they have?
Because the Palestinian Authority is acting as an agent of the enemy, it left no choice for the Palestinians, for the majority of the Palestinians who want to resist the occupation. They want to liberate their lands. So we are seeing now, since the assassination of Nizar, there are protests taking place in more than one city and in all in many villages in the West Bank.
It's on a daily basis. It's
yes.
not ending.
I think this is the available choice now. Maybe there has to be done, something has to be done inside the Fatah movement, because there are free people, there are real patriots in the Fatah movement. They have to rebel against their leadership. They have to change this leadership, because in the era of victories, with the victory that the resistance
achieved
the last month, this the way, the same way that Mahmoud Abbas is still ruling is outdated. I believe that
definitely incompatible. Definitely, it's something to really think about and give way for the Palestinians to decide
exactly.
for themselves. Obviously, but we hope the best for all our Palestinian brothers in the face of the occupation. Thank you very much, Ali Murad, political commentator, for joining us from Beirut to talk about the assassination of Nizar Banat, the Palestinian activist, sadly at the hands of Palestinian Authority security forces. Thank you very much for being with us. And please stay tuned. Next week, we have more for you on the Middle East Stream.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The summer of 2021 is already shaping up to be one for the record books, with much of the American West gripped by historic heat waves, extreme drought, and the threat of large wildfires that have already begun to burn across the region. The crisis has also extended into Canada, with temperatures in British Columbia soaring to 118 degrees Fahrenheit, or 46.5 degrees centigrade on Monday, shattering records for the area where few are set up for such intense heat. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Gabrielle Cannon, with contribution from the Associated Press. The piece is titled "Historic Heatwave, Extreme Drought and Wildfires Plague North American West." Summer of 2021 is already shaping up to be one for the record books, with much of the American West gripped by historic heat waves, extreme drought, and the threat of large wildfires that have already begun to burn across the region. The crisis has also extended into Canada, with temperatures in British Columbia soaring to 118 degrees Fahrenheit, or 46.5 degrees Celsius, on Monday, shattering records for the area where few are set up for such intense heat. Experts and officials fear that the catastrophic conditions fueled by the climate crisis will only get worse through the coming months. This week, an unprecedented and dangerous heat wave scorched the Pacific Northwest, obliterating records set just the day before. Seattle hit 108 degrees Fahrenheit, 42 degrees Celsius by evening, well above Sunday's all-time high of 104 degrees Fahrenheit, 40 degrees Celsius. Portland, Oregon reached 115 degrees Fahrenheit, 46 degrees Celsius, after hitting new records of 108 degrees Fahrenheit, 42 degrees Celsius on Saturday, and 112 degrees Fahrenheit, 44 degrees Celsius on Sunday. This is the beginning of a permanent emergency, said Washington's Governor Jay Inslee during an interview on MSNBC. We have to tackle the source of this problem, which is climate change. The heat wave, caused by what meteorologists describe as a dome of high pressure, extends from California all the way up through to Canada's Arctic territories and was worsened by the human-caused climate crisis. Zeke Hausfather, a scientist at the climate data nonprofit Berkeley Earth, said the Pacific Northwest had warmed by about 3 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.7 degrees Celsius in the past half a century, noting that this would still have been an extreme heat wave without the additional warming. He said, "This is worse than the same event would have been 50 years ago." Blistering heat hinted at the greater costs of climate breakdown to come. Blackouts and power outages were reported throughout the region as people trying to keep cool with fans and air conditioners strained the power grid. The heat forced schools and businesses to close to protect workers and guests, including places such as outdoor pools and ice cream shops where people seek relief from the heat. COVID-19 testing sites and mobile vaccination units were also out of service. In Portland, Oregon, light rail and streetcar service was suspended as power cables melted and electricity demand surged. Heat-related expansion caused road pavement to buckle or pop loose in many areas, including on I-5 in Seattle. Workers in tanker trucks in Seattle were hosing down drawbridges with water at least twice a day to prevent the steel from expanding in the heat and interfering with their opening and closing mechanisms. The Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell said the heat illustrated an urgent need for the federal infrastructure package to promote clean energy, cut greenhouse gas emissions, and protect people from extreme heat. Washington State was not built for triple-digit temperatures, she said. To the north in Canada, officials in the city of Barnaby, just east of Vancouver, reported that more than 24 people succumbed to the heat in just 24 hours. Heat warnings have been issued across the region, cautioning the most vulnerable, especially seniors, young children, and pregnant women, and those with illnesses, to stay hydrated and indoors. Many people don't have air conditioning, and residents are reportedly flooding department stores trying to purchase fans and cooling systems that are already in short supply. This heat wave poses a significant threat to British Columbians, particularly to seniors, to children, and the most vulnerable members of society. Climate change is a public health emergency, and we need to treat it like one. Sonia Forstenau, the leader of the Green Party of British Columbia, tweeted on Monday, 28th of June. Extreme heat, which was also felt across California and states in the southwest in recent weeks, has accelerated already devastating drought conditions, baking moisture out of the parched environment and intensifying the risk of wildfires. More than 58.4 million people live in the areas affected by the severe drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. and a record 49.7% of Western United States is now in the highest categories of extreme and exceptional drought levels. For the third straight week, extreme and exceptional drought in Western United States has set a drought monitor record. 49.7% of the West is in a state of either extreme or exceptional drought, compared to 48.9% last week. The high prior to the 2020-2021 drought season was 23rd of July 2002 at 45.3%. The drought situation in the Western United States continued to worsen after another mostly hot and dry week, the agency said in its most recent update released last week. Wildfires and increasing wildfire danger, water restrictions and damage to agriculture are very common across the West region. Large wildfires already burning, exhausting resources across the region much earlier than in previous years. 48 large fires have already burnt more than 661,000 acres of land across 12 states, as wildland fire personnel continue to deal with extreme temperatures and very dry fields across the western states, the National Interagency Fire Center reports. In Arizona alone, 17 wildfires are still uncontained. California, the fire season is outpacing last year's, when the state set a new record of roughly 4.1 million acres of land burned. Firefighters are facing hot, dry conditions and battling three large wildfires in Kern, in Siskiyou, and in San Bernardino counties. The lava fire, the largest burning in California, started by lightning in the Shasta Trinity National Forest, exploded overnight, and, by Tuesday morning, 29th of June, had torched more than 13,300 acres of land. It is 20% contained, and evacuation orders have been issued for thousands of residents who live and work in communities near Weed, California, close to the border with Oregon. The National Weather Service has issued red flag warnings for the area as officials brace for gusty winds and low humidity that could complicate containment efforts. Forest Service officials told reporters in a briefing on Monday night, 28th of June, that air tankers and helicopters had to be grounded through the afternoon due to powerful winds. "We had a rough 4 or 5 hours there not being able to fly," said Steve Watkins, incident commander. California's Governor Gavin Newsom secured support from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to help with costs to suppress the fire on Tuesday. Officials said the wildfire was expected to spread. "The wind is beginning to pick up again and it's going to be another hot day," said the public information officer for the incident, Jim Mackinson, noting that the temperatures were still in the hundreds. Jim Mackinson added that there was a high probability that the fire would be active on Tuesday afternoon, fueled in part by what officials call an unstable atmosphere when the smoke and winds create conditions that act almost like a thunderstorm. "The winds are just a fact of life around here," he said, but he added, "This is a lot hotter than what it normally gets around here. This is all part of the historic heat wave from Seattle on down."
The World with Reporters.
China is building up nearly 3,000 kilometer long network of roads railway lines, and in investing tens of billions of US dollars in Pakistan's energy and infrastructure projects under its mega Belt and Road global initiative. The major road infrastructure links western China to Deep Gwadar Port in southwest of Pakistan, 75 kilometers east of Iran, at the top of Arabian Sea. The US feels threatened over expansion of Chinese economic influence in the rest of the world through Gwadar Port, which also serves as an alternative option for Beijing in the event of military blockade of Chinese Navy in South China Sea by the US and its allies. The US has been pressurizing Pakistan into shelving Chinese mega projects, calling it a debt trap. Washington has been struggling hard to win over Islamabad in its what appears to be a cold war with Beijing over growing Chinese economic influence in the world.
Pakistan thinks that it is very unfair for the US or other powers, Western powers, for countries like us to take sides. Why do we have to take sides?
It's not going to happen that if there's pressure put on Pakistan to change its relationship or downgrade its relationship with China, it won't happen. Our relationship between the two countries, no matter what pressure is put on us, is not going to change.
We do not expect that living at the backyard of such a rising power, which happens to be luckily our strategic partner, how could we downgrade our relation with them and side or be more close with someone who is 10,000 miles away? So it is very unrealistic to expect of Pakistan. Militarily, we would not involve ourselves in the conflicts of the region.
The unprecedented cold shouldering to the US has followed a series of Pakistan's policy decisions to no longer get itself involved in any US-driven military conflict across the region. Islamabad has outrightly rejected the US request to set up military bases in Pakistan. The American CIA chief, William Byrne, who was on a secret visit to Pakistan a few weeks ago, was reportedly snubbed upon his request to see Prime Minister to reconsider his decision on military bases. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Aside from the enormous death toll, COVID-19 has wreaked economic havoc across the 27-nation EU. The Brussels Economic Forum, the European Commission's flagship annual event focusing on the economy, has just heard that young people have been disproportionately impacted.
We have a whole generation of youth that have had their education and their early labor market careers disrupted. So we really have to pay attention to those groups and try to move forward better.
Apparently, the EU is ill-equipped to create jobs because it's behind the curve when it comes to the digital technology sector.
Before, we were just lagging behind the United States and Japan at some stage. Mm-hmm. Now we are lagging behind the US and China.
Education systems in the EU need to be reformed so that young people can receive training for quality jobs, it has been suggested.
If you're from the north of Europe or the south of Europe, the east of the west, young people desire one thing. They want to build their future, they want to build a family, and this comes with a quality job.
The EU's handling of the coronavirus pandemic was criticized at the Brussels Economic Forum. A senior official recalls Russian medical supply trucks rolling into his home country of Italy in February 2020.
They had written in the tracks from Russia with love, and that in the same weeks we had export bans of medical equipment among European countries.
The EU's slow response to the pandemic has economic consequences, experts point out.
The United States, earlier than Europe, made huge progress on vaccines as soon as Joe Biden came into office. It also put forward an even bigger economic recovery package.
The event heard that Western nations rely too heavily on the arms industry and financial services sector when it comes to growing GDP. That's the total monetary value of any given country.
In contrast, imagine a good society, a harmonious one, where people feel safe, where they are healthy.
Contributors reminded the Economic Forum the EU was still struggling from the 2008 financial crisis when COVID-19 arrived. They warn if citizens are not treated better this time, the EU will fall apart. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
confirmed it carried out airstrikes in positions of Iraq's popular mobilization units on both sides of the country's border with Syria. The Pentagon claimed the Sunday night strikes were defensive and in retaliation for what it called the PMU's drone attacks on U.S. personnel and facilities in Iraq. But the PMU forces roundly rejected any involvement. They said they are part of Iraq's regular armed forces and that the soldiers who died in the U.S. raids were guarding the border. The PMU forces warned that they are ready to take revenge. The U.S. airstrikes are the second of their kind to be ordered by President Joe Biden against the PMU since he took office in January. Biden says the strikes are meant to end what he calls forces attacks on U.S. interests, but Iraqis see things differently.
The Iraqi people, government, officials, factions, and political figures see this attack as a boon to Daesh and other terrorists in Iraq and Syria. Through this attack, the U.S. seeks to weaken PMU forces in Iraqi and Syrian border areas so that Daesh terrorists can enter the Iraqi territory and carry out terrorist attacks. Effectively, the U.S. is now standing united with Daesh against the people of Iraq and its interests.
The strikes have been condemned across the political spectrum in Iraq. Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi denounced the airstrikes as a blatant and unacceptable violation of Iraq's sovereignty and its national security. The Iraqi military also issued a rare statement saying the U.S. move was a breach of the country's sovereignty. Different factions in the Iraqi parliament also condemned the airstrikes and called for steps to ensure such attacks will not repeat. They say the solution is ending the U.S. military presence in Iraq. That would be in line with a resolution adopted by the Iraqi parliament in January 2020, which called on the government to end the presence of all foreign troops in the country. The Iraqi parliament passed a resolution days after the U.S. assassinated Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani, along with a deputy commander of the PMU forces, Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes, in an airstrike near Baghdad airport. The U.S. has carried out more airstrikes on PMU positions ever since. During the period, Daesh terrorists have been the only other perpetrator of attacks on the popular forces.
The 10th session of the Islamic Radios and Televisions Union, hosted by the Iranian broadcaster, the IRIB. The event brought together representatives of 300 television and radio channels from 33 member states who attended the event through video conference. This year, the session was held with the motto of media justice and freedom of speech.
The 10th General Assembly of the Islamic Radios and Televisions Union comes as the websites of several of its affiliated media outlets were seized by the U.S. government, something which the union views as an attempt to silence dissenting voices.
Last week, the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation confiscated the websites of Press TV and three dozen other Iranian and regional media outlets for what it described as a means to combat disinformation. Addressing the ceremony in Tehran, head of the IRIB, Abdul Adi Ali Askari, condemned the U.S. move as an open violation of freedom of expression, calling it a failed attempt to muzzle the truth.
The extent of the effectiveness of resistance media outlets prompted the U.S. government to breach its own norms regarding free speech and take down those media. So this shows that those media have been successful. But the West must know that their move indicates their weakness, and on the other hand, the seized media will not stop working.
The Islamic Radios and Televisions Union is a multinational entity, which is currently comprised of 228 member media outlets from 33 countries, covering a total of 22 different languages. The main goal of the union is to break the Western monopoly on media and to offer an alternative narrative for regional and global developments, as opposed to the narrative presented by mainstream media. The union says the West has engaged itself in a full-scale media war to silence the alternative voices.
The slogan of freedom of expression is just a tool for the West to impose its will on different countries. Those media outlets that speak the truth and enlighten the minds of the world nations face censorship just because they expose truths that come at the expense of Western interests.
Head of the IRIB World Service, Peyman Jebeli, says the West can no longer pull the plug on the resistance media since they have already reached global audience, including Western societies.
This time, we witnessed global solidarity with the people of Palestine in their resistance against Israel. Hundreds of thousands of people in Chicago, London, and elsewhere in the West voiced their support for Palestinians. Does the U.S. think it can prevent the voices of Palestine resistance from reaching America by blocking our media outlets?
The Islamic Radios and Televisions Union says any attempt by the West to take down independent media is doomed to failure, and they will continue to shed light on the truth. However, member media outlets say they will sue the U.S. for its illegal media crackdown and will take measures to restore the seized websites. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Britain has a new man in charge of the country's health service. Former Chancellor Sajid Javid replaces Matt Hancock to helm the most under-pressure department in government. First point of order, attempting to manage the COVID crisis.
I want to see the restrictions lifted and life going back to normal as quickly as possible. And that's at my right here and now, that is my absolute priority.
But this is no ordinary cabinet reshuffle. Previous Health Minister Matt Hancock was forced to step down after embarrassing revelations about his private conduct were made public.
I understand the enormous sacrifices that everybody in this country has made, that you have made, and those of us who make these rules have got to stick by them, and that's why I've got to resign.
Despite presiding over the shambolic handling of Britain's COVID response, it became clear that Hancock had fallen out of favour inside Downing Street.
I think it's really likely he was pushed. The exact provenance of the CCTV footage from within his office is not clear, but it's clear that it would be very hard to access that if you weren't in some way strongly connected to the government. So if Boris didn't want him to go, someone did very much. Quite clear that his position was no longer tenable.
For those hoping there'd be a change in approach from the new health chief, they may well be disappointed.
There is no ideological difference between Sajid Javid and Matt Hancock. It's a new face, just as Jeremy Hunt. Jeremy Hunt became an absolute figure of hate while he was presiding over the NHS, precisely because he was implementing these ongoing privatisation policies. We're living with the consequences of the NHS being driven into the ground. We've seen unprecedented, really corruption, giving away, gifting tens and hundreds of billions during this pandemic. Sajid Javid, I have no doubt, will continue in the same line.
Britain's National Health Service was already creaking at the seams even before the pandemic. And for the millions who've been waiting to see a medical professional, well, they won't mind who is in charge of the health service. They just want to be made better, and made better soon. With COVID dominating the health agenda, Sajid Javid will have his work cut out for him. And as the fate of his two predecessors has shown, landing the top job is the easy part. Amina Taylor, London.
Rights activists, along with families of terror victims in Iran, attended this gathering in Tehran to mark the American Human Rights Week. The annual occasion aims to shed light on the U.S.'s record of rights violations in Iran.
We're marking the American Human Rights Week to review the numerous cases where the U.S. openly violated human rights in our country, like the American Navy's downing of our passenger plane in 1988, after which the perpetrators received a badge of honor in the U.S. The latest crime the U.S. has committed was to assassinate the spearhead of the fight against terrorism, General Qasem Soleimani.
This second day of the week-long occasion marks the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of the Iran Islamic Republic Party in Tehran by the U.S.-backed Mujahideen-e-Khalq terror organization, known as the MKO. 73 leading officials of the Islamic Republic were killed, including former Justice Chief Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Beheshti.
Iran says it has lost over 17,000 people in terrorist attacks. 12,000 of them were killed at the hands of the formidable MKO terrorist group. What's even more shocking is that the U.S. does not regard the MKO as a terrorist entity and has even established intimate ties with them.
The U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist organization. Following this measure, the group was relocated from its former stronghold at a U.S. military base in Iraq to Albania and France. Ever since, the MKO has held regular meetings with American and European officials.
Members of U.S. Congress regularly meet MKO leaders where they offer any kind of support to the terrorist group. The U.S. is still supporting the terrorists in their anti-Iran campaigns. the MKO killed our top nuclear scientists, and that was not possible without the US and Israel's assistance.
I lost my husband in the 1981 bombing of the Islamic Republic Central Office by the MKO. Interestingly, the spearhead of the terrorist operation, whose real name is Ali Mohtamed, took refuge in the Netherlands, and they welcomed him until a few years ago, when the MKO disposed of him as a lost cause.
The American Human Rights Week started on June 27th, which marks the anniversary of the failed assassination of the then-Iranian president Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei by the MKO terrorists in 1981, and will end on July the 3rd, which coincides with the anniversary of the U.S. Navy's shooting down of an Iranian passenger plane in 1988. Organizers of the occasion say the ultimate goal of the week-long ceremonies is to expose the U.S.'s double standards when it comes to the issue of human rights. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Farmers, traders, and exporters of agricultural crops held a demonstration in front of the United Nations headquarters in Gaza to deliver the representative of the United Nations a protest letter against new restrictions imposed by Israel to export Palestinian agricultural crops like vegetables. Israeli closure of borders has led to a huge damage in the agricultural sector of the Gaza Strip.
We have come here to protest against Israeli closure of borders. We want to sell our products in the West Bank and other parts of the world. Israel intends to ruin our lives by adopting such restrictive measures. We call on all human rights organizations to do something.
Palestinian farmers are facing serious financial losses due to the Israeli closure of borders. This is viewed in Gaza as part of a larger plan by Israel to destroy Palestinian economy. Palestinian farmers called on the international community to be committed to its responsibilities and pressurize Israel into opening the borders.
Israel's new restrictive measures will ruin our crops before they reach the target markets. All of our vegetables are stuck here and eventually destroyed. I'm standing here to protest these restrictions that have made our lives unbearable. We demand opening of the borders so we can export our products. This blockade is inhumane.
Along with the Israeli ban on export, the latest aggression on the Gaza Strip has doubled the damage in agricultural sector. This has led to severe losses in this sector as Palestinian farmers can barely afford the living.
Our message to the United Nations is that Israel's measures are aimed to deteriorate life of all Palestinian farmers and traders. The latest Israeli aggression has inflicted a heavy blow on the agricultural sector. Israeli restrictions have no purpose but to ruin agricultural sector of Gaza.
Due to the Israeli ban on the exportation of goods, the prices for agricultural products in Gaza have dropped significantly. Palestinian farmers and traders here say that the Israeli restrictions imposed on exporting crops aim to destroy the Palestinian economy. They call on the international community to end these restrictions and open the borders. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Demonstrations against Palestinian Authority over the death of Nizar Banat, an activist and outspoken critic of the PA, keep going on across the occupied West Bank. In the city of Ramallah, these protests turned violent as the protesters who began to march to presidential compound faced a group of PA president's security officers in plain clothes. The forces blocked the rally, chased and attacked the protesters who were chanting slogans against the PA and its president. Palestinian security forces in riot gear fired tear gas and stun grenades to disperse the protesters. Palestinian factions condemned the use of force against the protesters, saying people have the right to peacefully protest.
The people see that the investigation is slow and that the Palestinian Authority has not yet condemned the killing of Nizar Banat. So people are taking to the streets to ensure those behind Banat's death are put on trial.
Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Ishtayi said an investigation was launched to investigate Banat's death. Palestinians are demanding a swift, independent, and a transparent investigation. Palestinian rights group made an initial autopsy, saying that Banat took blows to the head, and the wounds indicated an unnatural death.
We need to take some practical steps within law that require justice, investigation, and accountability for those behind Nizar Banat's death. We say there is a need to dismiss this government as well as the heads of the security forces.
Journalists were also attacked by security forces during the protests. The Palestinian Journalists Union decried the grave development in the attack on freedom of expression and the media. Journalists, meanwhile, say condemnation is not enough. They say the attack is unacceptable and should be investigated in order to hold those responsible accountable.
Commentators say that what's going on today is only the tip of the iceberg. They say if the Palestinian Authority wants to prevent a possible collapse, it should bring those perpetrators into justice and allow people to freely protest and express their opinion. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
And armed conflict in Yemen 2021 was the title of the recent report of the Secretary General of the United Nations. In a press conference held by Yemen's Ministry of Human Rights, Yemen government discussed the UN report and how children protection could be achieved.
For years now, we have been used to see the United Nations doing the opposite of what it should do regarding the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition. This report in itself is considered a war crime against the children of Yemen. It was clear from the first day of the war in Yemen that the United Nations seeks to legitimize war and crimes.
The ministry said the report of the United Nations is full of inaccuracies and doesn't rely on any investigation on the ground, adding that the report aims to legitimize the Saudi war crimes against Yemeni children.
The most serious inaccuracy in the recent United Nations report is that it zeroed the number of crimes committed by the Saudi-led coalition countries and did not mention any of their crimes. Unfortunately, the United Nations accused the Yemeni army of targeting more than 7,000 children, and these numbers are incorrect. The United Nations didn't explain where it has got these statistics from.
Saudi Arabia, backed by Washington, launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. During the war years, Riyadh has committed numerous violations of international law, including using internationally prohibited weapons in its air raids, which have killed tens of thousands of civilians, most of them women and children.
Besides the ongoing Saudi siege that prevents millions of Yemenis, including children, from getting food, medicine, and fuel, Saudi airstrikes have also killed more than 4,000 Yemeni children alone, according to rights organizations. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Path towards enlightenment.
the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, which was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left you last week, and here is Ayah 10 of Surah Fath.
إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يُبَايِعُونَكَ إِنَّمَا يُبَايِعُونَ اللَّهَ يَدُ اللَّهِ فَوْقَ أَيْدِيهِمْ فَمَن نَكَثَ فَإِنَّمَا يَنْكُثُ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ وَمَنْ أَوْفَى بِمَا عَاهَدَ عَلَيْهُ اللَّهَ فَسَيُؤْتِيهِ أَجْرًا عَظِيمًا.
Indeed, those who pledge allegiance to you, O Prophet, pledge allegiance only to Allah. The symbolic hand of Allah is above their hands. So whoever breaks his oath, breaks it only to his own detriment. And whoever fulfills the covenant he has made with Allah, Allah will give him a great reward. If you might recall, last Friday, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, which hails as a manifest victory, the treaty the Prophet concluded in 6 AH at Hudaybiyah with the pagan Arabs on being barred entry into Mecca, we said the Almighty God entrusted the Prophet with the universal mission of Islam to serve as witness to the faith of the people, while giving tidings of rewards to the believers and warning those in error of the consequences of their actions. In other words, the Prophet is not only a testifier of Allah's oneness and supreme authority over the universe, but also a witness to people's acceptance or rejection of the message of Islam that obliges Muslims to support the Prophet and honor him as a token of their obedience to God, the Unseen, the Omnipresent. The ayah that we recited to you now means to say that the oath of allegiance to the Prophet by the people is actually a pledge by them to Allah, the Omniscient. So, whoever breaks his oath will do it to his own detriment, while those who fulfill their promise will receive great divine rewards. The reason for revelation of this particular ayah is that, before concluding the treaty, the Prophet sent an emissary to the pagan Arabs of Mecca to inform them of the peaceful intention of the Muslims to perform the Umrah pilgrimage, rather than seeking a confrontation with them. The emissary was detained by the Meccans, giving rise to rumors that he might have been killed. To calm down the Muslims, the Prophet gathered them under a tree and renewed the oath of allegiance from them to firmly stand by his side in case of any conflict. As per the Arab custom, such a pledge is given by placing the hand of the pledge giver on the hand of the Prophet, who is God Almighty's representative on earth. Hence, the symbolic reference to the divine hand that prevails over all and everything else. When the pagans heard about this, they freed the Prophet's emissary and agreed to sign a peace pact. This incident is known as Bay'at al-Rizwan, or Oath of Submission to Allah, which means the oath breakers do it to their own detriment. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, faith in God requires loyalty to the Prophet and those vested with religious authority. Number two, in critical circumstances, Muslim masses renew allegiance to their legitimate leaders in order to reaffirm their resolve to defend their faith and people's dignity. Number three, the symbolic hand of the all-merciful Lord is above all hands that aspire for the defense of Islam. And number four, the steadfast are naturally rewarded, while the oath breakers suffer the consequences of their misdeeds. Now let us listen to Ayah 11 of the same surah.
سَيَقُولُ لَكَ الْمُخَلَّفُونَ مِنَ الْأَعْرَابِ شَغَلَتْنَا أَمْوَالُنَا وَأَهْلُونَا فَاسْتَغْفِرْ لَنَا يَقُولُونَ بِأَلْسِنَتِهِمْ مَا لَيْسَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ قُلْ فَمَنْ يَمْلِكُ لَكُمْ مِنَ اللَّهِ شَيْئًا إِنْ أَرَادَ بِكُمْ ضَرًّا أَوْ أَرَادَ بِكُمْ نَفْعًا بَلْ كَانَ اللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ خَبِيرًا.
The Bedouins who lagged behind in jihad will tell you, O Prophet, our possessions and our families kept us occupied. So plead with Allah for our forgiveness. They say with their tongues what is not in their hearts. Say, who can be of any avail to you against Allah should he desire to cause you harm or desire to bring you benefit? Rather, Allah is well aware of what you do. When the Prophet started from Medina on the journey towards Mecca, he asked all the Muslims to join him in the pious act of performing the Umrah pilgrimage. Though the response was generally good, some tribes stayed back on the assumption of saving their life from possible attacks by the Meccans, since they thought the Prophet would be defeated. This shows the lack of faith in God of several Arab tribes that claimed to be Muslim, but in practice were not. Thus, when the Prophet and Muslims returned to Medina after successfully concluding the Hudaybiyah Treaty, the Arab tribes that did not accompany him proffered several excuses for their disobediences, such as, our properties and families prevented us from joining you. God thus revealed this ayah to the Prophet, exposing their hypocrisy and cautioning him that the Bedouins are in fact lying in order to deceive you. They should be told that God, the Omniscient, is all aware of everything, and none can save anyone from divine wrath, since it is only the Almighty Lord who rewards the faithful and punishes the sinners. From this ayah, we'll learn that, number one, in firm faith or lack of it from the depth of the heart prevents a person from fulfilling his or her obligations. Number two, excessive attachment to worldly affairs fills the heart with fear of the loss of transient life, and thus failure to participate in jihad at the battlefronts, when God has promised great rewards for those who obey His commandments with readiness to sacrifice whatever they possess. Number three, the Prophet's prayer and his beseeching of the all-merciful God for forgiveness of the sinners is accepted in the divine court. And number four, hypocrites always make lame excuses and utter lies instead of admitting the truth. Let us listen to ayahs 12, 13, and 14 as the concluding ayahs of this week's episode.
بَلْ ظَنَنْتُمْ أَنْ لَنْ يَنْقَلِبَ الرَّسُولُ وَالْمُؤْمِنُونَ إِلَىٰ أَهْلِهِمْ أَبَدًا وَزُيِّنَ ذَلِكَ فِي قُلُوبِكُمْ وَظَنَنْتُمْ ظَنَّ السَّوْءِ وَكُنْتُمْ قَوْمًا بُورًا وَمَنْ لَمْ يُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ فَإِنَّا أَعْتَدْنَا لِلْكَافِرِينَ سَعِيرًا وَلِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ يَغْفِرُ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ وَيُعَذِّبُ مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَكَانَ اللَّهُ غَفُورًا رَحِيمًا.
Rather, the reason of your disobedience of God is that you thought that the prophet and the faithful will not return to their folk ever, and that was made decorous to your hearts, and you entertained evil thoughts, and you were a ruined lot. As for those who have no faith in Allah and His prophet, we have prepared a blaze for the faithless. To Allah belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth. He forgives whoever He wishes and punishes whomever He wishes. And Allah is all-forgiving, all-merciful. These ayahs address the erring Arab tribes and tell them that they entertained suspicion and doubt about divine promise by thinking that the Prophet and those who had accompanied him to Mecca would never return to Medina, as they would be killed by the pagan Arabs. Satan made such evil thoughts seem fair to these Arab tribes who claimed to be Muslim but lacked faith in the heart. Consequently, they suffered loss and were deprived of the rewards of embarking upon that historic journey, which besides the victorious Treaty of Hudaybiyah included other honors, such as the Bay'at al-Ridwan, or the pledge to God Almighty to stand firm. As the next ayah means to say, their hearts were dead as a consequence of their disobedience of God and the Prophet, and dire fate was in store for them, such as disgrace, perdition, and torment in the hereafter, including the fires of hell. Ayah 14 lays emphasis on divine forgiveness and mercy, since everything in the heavens and the earth belong to God, whose warnings aim at jolting human conscience in order to open the path of return to the straight path to the sinners, and of repentance to even the disbelievers, in view of the fact that sins and disbelief are the results of ignorance. These ayahs teach us that, number one, wrong assumptions bring ruin and self-destruction, especially when divine laws are deliberately disobeyed. Number two, our fate depends on our faith and the deeds we do, whether good or bad, which either bring divine rewards or divine punishment. Number three, excessive attachment to family and worldly possessions hinders people from fulfilling their religious duties. And number four, the all-merciful Lord has left the doors of repentance wide open, and His warnings of punishment as well as the tidings of rewards are intended to give hope to the sinners and even the despair.